Canadian writer, filmmaker and actor David Cronenberg is the choice of my next guest, Patrick Chapman, in our Where Do I Begin slot for Tuesday evenings. The Fly, Dead Ringers, Videodrome, Crash and other films have seen Cronenberg explore the genres of horror and science fiction to make uncomfortable viewing for his audiences. Car crashes, interspecies morphing and gynecology all make for unnerving hosts for Cronenberg's take on body horror and the exploration of very serious themes as well. Patrick, first of all, it was The Fly, in fact, that first alerted you to the dark and unsettling world of David Cronenberg. When did you come across that film?
So I saw it in 1986 when it came out, and it was one of those films where you, a light bulb moment, and you go, this is my kind of thing. And I thought it was a wonderful rom-com as well as being a horrific monster movie as well.
I haven't heard The Fly described as a rom-com too often.
It's sort of not a date movie, but it's about two people who fall in love, and it's an allegory for toxic relationships, really. It just happens to be that this gentleman has been mixed with the DNA of a fly, and, you know, the girlfriend has to save herself because there's no way the relationship can continue.
You say that The Fly kind of opened up the world of David Cronenberg to you. And what was it in that world that attracted you in?
Well, I'd always been interested in science fiction and horror. And the emotional content of the story was, I think, picked up on by a lot of critics at the time as well. It was one of his early films where the characters had real relationships that you could recognize. And they were played by Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum, who were a couple at the time. So their chemistry kind of set that film on fire, really.
So that was the film that started you into the world of David Cronenberg. Mm. But in our slot where we asked the question, where do I begin with, you've given us three films, really, which fit into what we might refer to as classic Cronenberg body horror. Explain that term, body horror. It's a kind of a mix of genres in many ways, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's basically the idea, it's a form of horror which isn't really supernatural, though it can have science fiction elements. It deals in grotesque or disturbing mutations, infections and violations of the human body. And it's often in Cronenberg, it involves a merging of a creature and a human, and it's to the mutual benefit of both.
Is there a touch of, if you like, as old a set of stories as Ovid's Metamorphosis, it really coming into a very 20th century type of sensibility in the world of Cronenberg?
Well, that's actually a good observation because, yes, you could say that, like Brundle in The Fly turning into The Fly, or in Videodrome, Max Wren has his hallucinations where he finds a Betamax slot in his stomach and he puts a tape into it, you know, so... all sorts of metamorphoses happen in his work.
Yeah, and in fact, the first your first choice for us is Videodrome, which really is a cult classic. One of the first projects, Hollywood-backed projects of Cronenberg.
Yeah, and he basically didn't compromise whatsoever with when he went to make a film in the mainstream. He always took himself there rather than and brought them with him. So he always managed somehow to create honest material that doesn't compromise. But this one is quite interesting because it's made in the pre-digital era. So the technology it involves, it's about a TV signal that can cause a tumor. And it's coached in, or it's cloaked in a program of extreme torture and violence. And the idea is of the people who've sent this out is that if you're sick enough to watch our program, you deserve to die. So it's an intriguing commentary on prurience and censorship, but also on the sort of double standards that a lot of fundamentalists have in these movies.
Let's have a listen to a clip then featuring Nikki Brand, played by Debbie Harry, and she's talking through the TV to Max, played by James Wood, guiding and encouraging him to go on to the next phase.
I'm here to guide you, Max. I've learned a lot since I last saw you. I've learned that death is not the end. I can help you.
I don't know where I am now. I'm having trouble finding my way around.
That's because you've gone just about as far as you can with the way things are. Videodrome still exists. It's very big, very complex. You've hurt them, but you haven't destroyed them. To do that, you have to go on to the next phase.
What phase is that?
Your body has already done a lot of changing, but that's only the beginning. The beginning of the new flesh. You have to go all the way now. A total transformation. Do you think you're ready?
I guess I am.
To become the new flesh, you first have to kill the old flesh. But don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to let your body die. Just come to me, Max. Come to Nikki.
Debbie Harry as Nikki Brand and James Wood as Max in that scene from Videodrome from David Cronenberg. And Patrick Chapman is with me this evening, author of the book Cronenberg, David Cronenberg, Every Movie, Every Star, to answer the question for us, where do I begin with David Cronenberg? Obviously, we get that tagline there, long live the new flesh. There's a fundamentalist aspect to that, which I think you've touched on. But that title for the film, Videodrome, what is Cronenberg? What kind of critique do you think he was making about media? And while video wasn't exactly social media, you can kind of see it as the precursor to the type of social media that we're dealing with today.
Well, we now have more technology as an extension of our bodies today. Anyone who, people forget that you need to be able to afford access to a computer to engage in this new society. But back then they had analog, so it's all videotapes and so on. And that actually increases the specialness of the film's aesthetic in the present day. But these people who are behind the signal in this movie trying to impose a new flesh are basically talking about a trope that's common in Cronenberg's work, which is that of creative destruction. And that is a creative act is a destructive act. So if you want to create something new, you have to kill off something that already exists. And that's quite a radical idea in some senses, because it's very year zero. Mm. And the long live the new flesh, like in The Fly, Brundle loses his old flesh and becomes a new thing. Or the characters, we'll get to them in a moment, in Dead Ringers have to do something radical to change themselves. Or earlier in his career, he had parasites taking over apartment buildings, and that was a happy thing for the parasite. So it's really a... uncompromising approach.
Yeah, you've touched on it there, that it was a happy thing for the parasite. How nihilistic is that vision, you know, that for something new to be created, something else must be destroyed? You can look at that in a positive way. It does sound quite nihilistic, but not necessarily is it so.
Well, he's always said that from the point of view of the parasite, a widespread infection is a happy outcome. And it really does depend on changing your point of view. So, that's why The Fly can be seen as a romance and Videodrome can be seen as a comment on television as was back then. I mean, there's a character in it called Brian Oblivion who doesn't... It's great because it's got an apostrophe after the O, so it's a wonderful Irish name. And he doesn't exist anymore except on videotape, because when he died, in the year before he died, he recorded himself saying a lot of things. And that is an avatar of basically a fake person, but the reality is his television. Mm. He only ever appears on television. And that prefigures us talking to each other on Zoom or Facebook or whatever it is. You can go years without meeting people who you interact with every day.
Yeah, and I suppose in some ways it prefigures a type of transhumanism, that type of idea as well. Dead Ringers then, your second choice, Patrick. You actually say that The Fly, the 1986 film, that was a kind of a gateway drug to Dead Ringers from 1988. Explain what you mean by that statement.
Because the aesthetic in The Fly is a lot more accessible in certain ways, but it contains all of Cronenberg's tropes and styles and the subjects he deals with. Dead Ringers is a much more austere film. It's beautifully shot. It's got wonderful cinematography by Peter Suschitzky, a brilliant score by Howard Shore, and it's got a remarkable performance by Jeremy Irons as the two brothers, Elliot and Beverly Mantle. And they used new technology to make that happen seamlessly. But the reason I think it comes to me after The Fly is, or The Viewer, is that the characters aren't necessarily likable, but they're very relatable from a certain point of view. Again, that thing. I mean, one of them invents surgical instruments for operating on mutant women because he's off his head on drugs and he thinks that the women are wrong, the technology is right. So he has to reinvent his surgical instruments. They're gynecologists, by the way. I forgot to mention that. But the way you look at they're twins, but the tagline for the movie was one mind, two bodies, or two bodies, one mind. And that actually comes about in the film, that you see this progression, that they actually merge together emotionally at the end. I think this film it's absolutely beautiful, but I think it's really disturbing for a lot of people to watch. So The Fly might be your gateway drug. Dead Ringers is something a little bit stronger.
Yeah, you see, you want to know where you're heading when you start watching Dead Ringers. Let's have a listen to a clip where the Mantell brothers, Beverly and Elliot, have a lunch date. Beverly introduces the actress Claire, played by Genevieve Bugeaud, to his brother, Elliot. But have they met before?
Well, Claire Niveau, this is my brother Elliot. Hi, Claire. I hope Bev's told you what a big fan I am of your movies.
No, he hasn't. As a matter of fact, he hasn't mentioned you at all.
Really? That's not very flattering. Well.
I feel such a fool, actually. I must be the only woman in town who doesn't know about the fabulous mental twins.
What are you drinking?
Nothing. I want to be very sober right at this moment. I want to be very clear. There really isn't any telling you apart, is there? Absolutely identical in every respect.
I'm actually a couple of millimeters taller.
I bet somebody who knew you both, how shall I put it, knew you both really well, could tell the difference, couldn't they? Without measuring your height, I mean.
What do you mean?
Well, Beverly's the sweet one, and you're the shit. Am I right?
This is some feisty lady you found, Beverly.
Let's be frank, okay, Elliot? Let's ease up on the bullshit for one moment. You can be honest with me. After all, I am laying both of you, aren't I?
Just hang on a minute.
It's a sweet little act you have. You soften them up with all that smarmy concern, and along comes Dracula here and polishes them off.
Actually, I was the one who fucked you first, but I gave you to my baby brother because you weren't very good.
Oh, what a pair. They're Beverly and Elliot. They're played by Jeremy Irons and Genevieve Bugeaud, the actress Claire, who they're both have out to dinner. It's an extraordinary scene. Patrick Chapman speaking to us this evening about David Cronenberg. It's an extraordinary scene, and what is extraordinary that you believe the Irons is two people there. Performance of great quality.
Absolutely, and he created mannerisms for each one, and he played them all, worked them out separately using the Alexander technique. So he worked on one character, then the other, as if they were two separate people.
And that Alexander technique being a kind of a physicalization, where he almost got a type of stature, or pose isn't quite the right word, but a stature for each character that created a totally different person for the viewer.
That's right. He would step on the front of his feet for one character, on the back for others, so he'd give them a different walk and so on.
And I suppose the twins idea is classic Cronenberg territory, you know, the good guy, the bad guy.
It does have its origin in his work, in things like Daryl Revok and people in Scanners, for instance. But I think it is based on a real story, a true story, but it's completely different. It takes that as a starting point for something that's really very personal to Cronenberg, I think.
All right, let's move on then, Patrick, to your third choice. Comes from 1996, Crash, based on the book of the same name by J.G. Ballard. Very much we're in a world of celebrity here. Death and morbid attitude to loss of life in car crashes. He really picks his subjects in a very Cronenberg way.
Well, he's one of those directors, and maybe the only director, who just went on from one allegedly unfilmable book to another. And he took Crash from, you know, people said it couldn't be done, and they weren't wrong. They weren't right. He could do it. He also did Naked Lunch later on, and people said that was an unfilmable book, but he made a good go of that. Here you've got J.G. Ballard's book, which was a controversial book even at the time, 1973, about people who find their emotions so deadened they can only feel things by experiencing extreme events. And in this story, it's car crashes. They get sexually aroused by having car crashes or visiting sites of car crashes. And Vaughn, the bad guy, I think he's the trickster character in this, he restages famous car crashes such as James Dean, and he was about to do another one when his stunt driver crashed. But in the book, he wants to die in a car crash with Elizabeth Taylor. In the film, that doesn't happen, but because, Elizabeth Taylor is the wrong age for it anyway, and she was still alive, so it would have been very insensitive.
I wouldn't have thought insensitivity was at the top of Cronenberg's list of concerns.
Well, Vaughn is a sort of cult leader in the sense that he gathers acolytes around him and brings them into a world of car crashes. And again, this is techno-fetishism in the way that earlier Cronenberg films transform the body with parasites. Here the body is transformed by the technology of the car crash.
James Ballard is going to feature in this scene that I'm about to play a clip from. James Spader, playing the character Dr. Helen Remington, played by Holly Hunter, and they're visiting one of Vaughn's events, played by Elias Koteas, and he's reacting to famous car crashes, as you said, Patrick, including here the fatal crash of James Dean in his Porsche.
Is this part of the act, or are they really hurt?
I don't know. You can never be sure with Vaughn. This is his show.
Ralph Fudrich was thrown from the Porsche and spent a year in the hospital recovering from his injuries. Donald Turnipseed was found wandering around in a daze, but basically unhurt. James Dean died of a broken neck and became immortal.
Elias Koteas there as Vaughn, and Dr. Helen Remington, played by Holly Hunter, James Ballard, played by James Spader, in that scene from Crash, the third of the three films that Patrick Chapman is sending us to in terms of getting us in touch with the world of David Cronenberg. Again, what I remember of this film, Patrick, is the physical pain almost. I find myself at times not able to watch the sort of things that were being shown to me on screen. It caused quite a controversy at Cannes when it was shown there.
But they always boo things at Cannes. The jury wanted to give it an award, but Francis Coppola, who was the jury president, didn't want to be associated with it. He thought it was awful. So they went around him and gave it a special jury prize for audacity. And Coppola wouldn't give the award in person to Cronenberg because he hated the film. So, and it hasn't stopped being controversial, I think. But one of the funny parts of the reaction to it is that Virginia Bottomley, I think Heritage Secretary in London at the time, put pressure on Westminster Council to ban it. And they did. So you can't see it in Westminster, but you can walk down Shaftesbury Avenue to Camden and watch it there.
As long as it's within your 5K at the moment, yeah, if there were a cinema open for you to go and see it. Finally, what did Ballard, the novelist, what did he think of Cronenberg's take on his own book?
Well, he was the unusual author who thinks the film is better than the book. And he thought it was much more powerful and dynamic. And he basically said Cronenberg improved the story by making a film of it. And he said it was terrific.
But does that tell us something about Cronenberg's ability as a person of the cinema to take, the written word? Because so often it's a disaster, isn't it? When something is moved from the page to the screen. What was that quality that Cronenberg had that made him capable of doing, or has, that makes him capable of doing that?
Well, everything he makes, he does it for himself. He makes his own work of a piece of a novel if he's adapting a book. He's done so many of them now, but a good example of that is Naked Lunch, where he agreed that the book was unfilmable. So he took pieces of Burroughs's life and mixed those in with bits of the book. So he adapted it into a new medium rather than simply transposed it.
Yet another metamorphosis, I suppose we could say, to go back to our original theme. So that's your pathway, your suggested pathway for us through the works of David Cronenberg: Videodrome, then Dead Ringers, and then Crash. But be ready for all of them, I think we should say to everybody. Thanks for speaking to us this evening, Patrick.
Welcome.
That's Patrick Chapman, and Patrick's book on Cronenberg is called David Cronenberg, Every Movie, Every Star. It's published by Sonic Bond Publishing. And that is our lot for this Tuesday evening here on Arena. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields researched. Janice Furphy was the broadcast coordinator. Sound supervision this evening was by Heather Carney. And tonight's programme was produced by Olin McGowan. I will be with you once again, 7 o'clock here tomorrow night on RT Radio 1. If you want to listen back to anything, by the way, on the programme, you can go to our website, rte.ie/radio14/arena, an archive of all of our interviews within that particular web page. Lots of very interesting stuff there.